The Burning Bush, Commentary for the July 12, 2025 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. Exodus 3, verse 2. 80 years before, Moses had been cast adrift on the Nile River by his mother for fear of his execution by the Egyptians. Pharaoh had decreed the destruction of all Israelite male babies, and her desperate action saved the child's life, for Pharaoh's daughter found him, and after the child was weaned, brought him to grow up in the royal palace, educated along with the children of Egyptian nobles. Moses was aware of the plight of the Israelites. His mother would have taught him their story in his infancy. He nonetheless felt the weight of his people's bondage and saw his position of privilege as an opportunity to better their lot, even killing an Egyptian taskmaster he found abusing an Israelite. However, he found that the Israelites did not appreciate his efforts and rejected his leadership in the struggle for freedom, according to Exodus chapter 2, verses 13 and 14. Even worse, an Israelite must have informed Pharaoh about what Moses had done, for the only witnesses to his action were Moses, the dead Egyptian, and the Israelite Moses had rescued. Pharaoh sought to kill Moses in retribution. Betrayed by his own people and sought for execution, 40-year-old Moses fled to Midian, where he was sheltered by a Midianite priest, Jethro, and eventually married into his host's family. For 40 more years, he tended sheep and learned at the feet of that priest. What he learned reawakened the memories of the lessons taught him in infancy and opened his heart that God might speak into his life. One day, 80 years after that voyage on the Nile River in a basket, God did just that. His appearance through the burning bush that did not burn up was an incontrovertible miracle, something Moses had never personally experienced. God has spoken into people's lives more often than many are willing to acknowledge. They either doubt the veracity of the accounts or reject them as natural phenomena that science has yet to explain, assuming that once science advances to that point, we will discover that it was not a miracle after all. This is illustrated in the movie The Gods Must Be Crazy. In that movie, a bushman in Africa discovers a soda bottle tossed from a plane and assumes it is a sign from God, since he is unable to explain how it appeared in the bush. But the assumption in this satire is that all miracles are scientifically explainable. This fails to acknowledge that there will always be areas that will never be explained, especially if we consider that we have no ability to visualize infinity, either in our minds or modeled in real life. Despite that ever-present limitation, we still assert that there is nothing beyond the reach of science, and therefore no truly unexplainable miracles. Nonetheless, there is value to what science has brought us, even though too often it has been made to subdue and control others. The horrific examples of Hiroshima and Nagasaki will remain as a black stain on humanity for centuries, if not millennia. To its credit, science has nearly eradicated some diseases from the planet and has connected humanity globally in real time. This ministry, reaching digitally into 130 countries around the world, would not exist without those advances. One might ask what made the difference that God finally spoke to Moses concerning the Israelites in Egypt. It is because Moses was no longer the same man who had taken the liberation of his people into his own hands. In fact, he was so far from that person that he did all he could to not be a liberator, begging God to send someone else. The sting of the memory of his betrayal by his own people had never fully left, and he questioned whether they would ever accept him as liberator, even if he told them God had chosen him. To bolster his confidence, God gifted him with miracles and knowledge of God as the foundation of all existence, knowing his name. I understand his reluctance because while I was in the Army in Alaska, attempts were made to take my life for faithfully witnessing for God. It is not an experience one easily forgets. Eventually, Moses runs out of arguments. The patience of God reveals his understanding of the wounds we all suffer and the compassion he has for us in our brokenness. That patience is revealed in his 80-year wait for Moses to come to the point where he could become the liberator of the Israelites. Lest we think he was only waiting on Moses, 40 years before, those Israelites were more willing to betray a liberator than to follow one. Much of that viciousness grew out of their oppression and the fear it engendered. They had been taught by their oppressors to obey whoever could instill the most fear in their lives. This may explain the harshness of some of their encounters with God. They had been trained to the whip and the lash, and understood only pain as a means of control. I have never forgotten an experience along those lines that I witnessed while in college. A dog had been hit by a car while trying to cross the street. Its yelps were heartrending. The closest person, a young woman, compassionately tried to help the dog, but it was in too much pain to understand, and it bit her repeatedly. Eventually, the dog was rescued and helped. But instead of comforting the dog, as the young lady tried to do, it had to be bundled up in blankets, even though the pressure of the blankets caused more pain, so that it could be helped. No one wanted to cause more pain to the animal, but it was the only hope to save its life. In the case of the Israelites, I would hate to be charged with deciding to inflict pain on the few that the many might be saved, as happened several times in the wilderness. It would take tremendous patience. Even Moses' patience became exhausted toward the end of the wilderness wanderings. Maybe he remembered his betrayal from the past and felt he saw it happening again. God intended he should be relieved of that fear and let God carry the burden of that past. When Moses failed to do that, it cost him entry into the Promised Land. We should all remember that lesson, lest past betrayals keep us from entering that promised rest. One of the blessings in life for a man is to have partnered with a godly wife. Moses had that with Zipporah, and I have that with my wife, Karen. I value greatly being able to discuss with her some of the insights for these commentaries. One of the discussions we had was regarding the circumcision event that occurred on the road back to Egypt. Moses had circumcised his oldest son, Gershom, but had not done the same for his younger son, Eliezer. The text says that God sought to kill him for avoiding this. That may have been an overly dramatic depiction of the Lord withstanding him and requiring the circumcision before he could continue. In any event, Zipporah performed the ritual that Moses failed to do, and the family continued to Egypt. In our discussion, we realized that failure to do this could have sabotaged the whole mission. Circumcision was an identifier of who was an Israelite and who was not. Had Moses claimed to be sent by God while his own son did not bear the marks of an Israelite male, the people would have rejected him as a liberator. The Apostle Paul understood this principle when he wrote, To the weak I became weak, to win the weak. I have become all things to all people, so that by all possible means I might save some. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 22. Through the 2,000 intervening years, we have forgotten this, for now we emphasize how we are not like those other miscreants and withdraw into our enclave of solitude, where even those who come knocking are rigorously tested to see if they might be allowed in. Few question what sacrifices they would be willing to endure that others might find entry and fellowship with God. We live in a divided time. Society is splintered into factions. It is no surprise that a chasm exists between science and faith, with those on each side of the divide insisting that it is impossible to meld the two. In the past, someone like Isaac Newton could be both a cleric and a scientist, and both disciplines bore fruit as a result. In any event, those who say God does not exist, or who have doubts, may never find confirmation of his existence, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. Hebrews 11, verse 6. Just as mathematics is an essential for scientific inquiry, faith is essential for spiritual discovery. Paul wrote, "The person without the Spirit does not accept the things that come from the Spirit of God, but considers them foolishness and cannot understand them, because they are discerned only through the Spirit." 1 Corinthians 2, verse 14. It follows then that without faith in that Spirit, its voice, if heard at all, will be only gibberish. We cannot stick our fingers in our ears and then claim God does not exist because we hear nothing. Thank you for listening to this commentary podcast. You can find the written version of this commentary, as well as hundreds more commentaries and podcasts, at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. You can also find links to books written by the author, as well as additional articles. Once again, that website is www.visitstillwaters.com. May God richly bless you and your family.